Hey, it's Lisa Carlin from Attacking Third to tell you about the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. It's equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend. The Hyundai Santa Fe features available all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, plus available dual wireless charging pads, ensuring that you can take on any adventure. It's ski season, and with the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe, I can easily load the car with all my gear plus my friends in the third row and make it right to the base of the slopes with all-wheel drive. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to Attacking Third, presented by CarMax, the way car buying should be. Ladies, we are back in the studio. Christine Kupo, Lisa Carlin, and Jenny Chu here for you. And I am so happy to see you ladies in person. We're here.
It's wonderful to be back in the studio, to actually be able to like touch people and see people. It's great.
The vibes.
It's good.
Yes. Yeah,
through the roof right now.
I got so many hugs today. Let me tell you, that does not happen when I record in my house.
You don't say.
Nobody hugs me, Christine. What can I say? Let's get straight into it because we only have, 11, maybe 12 minutes for this one. As Courtney said, let's go into the news. Seattle Reign put out a statement saying their sale is nearing completion. These are the details. OL Group will sell 100% of shares for a reported sale price of $58 million. The investment group acquiring the Reign Group includes Seattle Sounders and global investment firm Carlyle. The sale is expected to close in early 2024, and it needs to be approved by NWSL and MLS Board of Governors, considering that the Seattle Sounders is a part of that. But ladies, the coolest part of this is that the OL Reign was bought, or OL bought it in 2019 for $3.5 million. So I did some math, a little bit of division, and that is 16.57 times worth more now since 2019. Yeah. Isn't that beautiful, Lisa?
Yeah, and this is a good group. When you look at the club as a whole, with Laura Harvey and the players that they have, the caliber of football that is being played in Seattle is really high. They were in the NWSL championship last year. The quality of football is really good. The city loves this team and supports it. It's a really good fan base as well. It's just interesting that we're seeing so many different teams being sold right now at this point.
I think right now the nature of the game, especially domestically, shifted a little bit, where you're seeing a lot of these more short-term investors enter the soccer space. And with that, you're going to see them potentially try to give up sales as soon as they can create bigger revenue streams. So as more entrants come into the league, you're going to get more investors. You're going to get people looking for short-term investments and potentially long-term investments. So teams that look more attractive, you're probably going to see more buyers jumping on there.
Christine, breaking it down for us financially.
I was going to say, if you guys can't tell, Christine Kupo is our financial girly coming from the financial world into the reporting and broadcast role. We're going to get a little bit more into that, the fact that there are more teams coming and going in the sales aspect. But first, reported by Sportco over the weekend, San Diego Wave owner Ron Burkle has agreed to sell the franchise to the Levine-Leichtman family for $113 million, though the club received a valuation of $120 million, which is the highest ever for an NWSL club. And these numbers are massive. I mean, I am so excited. You're nodding your head there because as our finance girly, you know that this is huge. From a $2 million expansion fee 2 years ago to now being sold for $113 million, I mean, what does this mean for women's soccer?
It means there's an appetite for it, for sure. And we've known this for a long time, but the conditions are now proving extremely favorable, both to the teams, the fans, and now also investors. When you look at a team like San Diego and they're getting this valuation that's extraordinary, and not to go too deep into it, but there's a few different methods that you can evaluate a team based on. For starting teams or starting entities, you'll usually see more of a comparison to the most likely product, and they usually can sort of inflate their pricing a little bit that way. San Diego, I suspect, and I haven't looked at it or delved deep into it, is what they've done is actually looked at the fact that they've sold out stadiums, their consistent revenue streams, and also their projected revenues going forward simply helped to boost them in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, especially considering the new kits that San Diego came out with this year. That'll definitely be an increase in revenue. But with San Diego, the sale that's being sold right now, Ron Burkle bought this club in 2021 for $2 million. He is making $111 million on this sale. It says a lot about the investment into women's football. It's no longer a charity case. It's no longer, hey, let's try to get it off the ground. Oh, we should put a cute little team in San Diego. No, this is a club that won the Shield last year. They are gunning for a championship this year. They want to be at the top of the game. Being in women's sports is an investment, and it's a really good one at that, especially right. considering
here's 100%. The thing, anybody that's not jumping into this investment pool, even that do not care about soccer, yeah. would be a fool at this point. And the long-term benefit of that is that the sport will continue to grow, and the fans and the teams will continue to benefit from it. So irrespective of a soccer fan or not, they know a good investment when they see one.
Mm-hmm. Right. If I had money, I would be investing, guys, because I know that women's soccer is on the up and up. I just don't have it right now.
You want to go half season?
Let's figure something out so that we can make some money eventually. But I spoke at a women's panel for Women's History Month, and there was other sports on there, and they were talking about softball. And I was talking about the growth in women's soccer and how much money is being made. And they were like, oh, yeah, it's so good for people to, you know, get on board with women's sports. I'm like, no, they're making money. This is not, this is exactly as you mentioned, it's not a charity case. People aren't just throwing money out for no reason. They're smart people and they're making money because there is money to be made in women's sports and women's soccer specifically. All right, we'll go through the games of the weekend now because I just wanted to hone in on there is money here to be made. Chelsea and Arsenal, we're going to start there. The 3-1 win for the Blues. I had some American friends at this match and they were in awe of getting to be at a WSL match to begin with. And the biggest takeaway that they said was Lauren James is unbelievable in person.
How can you not say that? I mean, she is fantastic. Chelsea had a little bit of luck on their side throughout this game. The pure power from Lauren James's right foot to find the back of the net in the opening 15 minutes set the tone for this Chelsea side, because Arsenal, hey, they're not a bad group by any means, but Chelsea continued to get lucky in the 21st minute. It was a strike that just backfalls right here and then running through the ball. Ultimately, with this one, Nuskin just toe pokes it in to redirect it. And it's a little bit lucky, but that's what you have to do, especially in these moments. And goal differential is such a big factor. The fact that Chelsea conceded one at the end, they're definitely not happy about that.
We also have to lean into that luck that you've talked about, because quite frankly, I think this all was a cursed match with Arsenal showing up unable to play in their actual socks. And the kit man, we want to know how much he's on the hook for at this point.
Yes, seriously.
Because Arsenal, if you couldn't tell, ended up wearing Chelsea store socks with a tape across it, because they had a dual problem of Chelsea sock and Nike sponsor. So I don't think that probably set Arsenal out on the right foot, pun intended.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. And then, so you're already thrown off as a player. You're now
having to be delayed
because of the socks. You're now wearing different socks than you're used to. They could be different thickness. And now you have tape around your sock to cover up the logo. And then in the first 30 minutes, you're down 3-0.
Yep.
That's tough. That is really tough to come out of that mentally.
I completely agree with you, Lisa. I do want to say, though, I know that, you know, the eye test matters more, but the XG here is quite different. When you talk about Chelsea, 2.94 XG compared to Arsenal's 0.53. Yes, of course, that aspect plays into it. I know we make jokes about it, but actually,
it
that
does.
Kind of throws you off, because a lot of us have rituals ahead of things that we need certain things to go right for our headspace to be in the right place, and that definitely does throw someone off.
And when
I was
you have
joking.
Stuff going wrong in the game, too, and you're behind, that also is another mental test for you, because a lot of players have a hard time getting over the hump when you're already behind, right? You're trying to find the motivation. You may not be able to. You've already had the distractions. This wasn't a typical Arsenal performance, is what I'll say, by any means. And so, to me, it leads to a number of factors, obviously, and also with Chelsea simply being good.
And on the other side of that, if you're Chelsea and things start going your way, you feel really confident. Mm-hmm. You're willing to take some more shots, some more risks, because, hey, the way Chelsea was shooting, it was bouncing around, pinballing inside the box and finding the back of the net. Definitely shout out, though, to Hannah Hampton in goal for the Blues. She came up with some really big saves and kept this in Chelsea's favor, because Arsenal did get chances and opportunities as the game grew on. They ultimately get consolation goal at the end of this one, Kim Little off a corner kick, but will help in goal differential and hurt Chelsea a little bit, but it was a rough day to be Arsenal.
We'll talk a little bit deeper into Chelsea needing that goal differential aspect with the title race so close later on in the show. But let's go ahead and move on to the EKG Challenge Cup. San Diego Wave and Gotham FC faced off at Gotham's home for this one. Lisa, did you go to it?
I did not. I wish I could have been there because I heard the crowd was absolutely electric at Red Bull. It was a revamped Challenge Cup. So we got to see the two best teams from 2023. The Challenge Cup with champions, Gotham FC, and then the Shield winner, San Diego. And honestly, I think we got the best two teams competing to start this season.
We did. I was present and accounted for at Red
Yes.
Bull Arena. With all, as one of the 14,000 plus fans in attendance.
And yep, 14,241 with Christine there.
What I must say, though, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way at all, but in the past, when you've gone to matches at RBA, whether it be for Red Bulls, for Gotham, you've kind of always had your pick of seats. It was packed. You couldn't just simply arbitrarily decide that you should maybe go sit by your friends. It was actually a really nice experience for a Challenge Cup or any match, actually, mm-hmm. in the tri-state area. It's been a while since we've seen that stadium that full.
Yeah.
And there was ultimately the trophy ceremony at the end of it, the 88th minute goal from Alex Morgan. Gotham allowed San Diego to stay in this game. Gotham had chances early in the first half. They were creating opportunities and they did not finish them, which allowed Alex Morgan to come on at half for the Wave. And she just continued to grow throughout this game. We saw a bit of a different formation for San Diego as well, with almost more of a diamond in the midfield. And the back line for Gotham, I want to give a shout out to Tierna Davidson. She was acquired in the offseason by Juan Carlos Amoros, and her in the back, center back with Maitani. Mm-hmm. That's a really good pairing, yeah. A really good center back duo that had never played together before this match. In preseason, they kept missing each other. They weren't there at the same time, whether it was international break or injuries and illnesses. And they did really well considering they were going up against a potent San Diego attack. Mm.
I will say we saw her in the W Gold Cup, and I was incredibly excited to see how well she did for the U.S. Women's National Team. That's someone that came back from injury, came back from being left off of the roster, to having such a good center back performance now carried over into her season. I think that that was one of the huge upsides of the W Gold Cup, right? Them getting real minutes in these. You see Sophia Smith scoring, you see Alex Morgan scoring, Tierna Davidson getting off on a good start. So plenty to talk about there in that being a good experience for everyone around. I know we were covering it, Lisa. There's plenty to talk about here, though, because the one thing I wanted to say before we move on to the next game is Casey Stoney correcting the reporter in the press conference when he referenced that Gotham was the winner and how they feel about beating them.
Yeah.
Casey Stoney goes, "We won the league." No, we won the league. No, we won the league. Like four or five times, and I was like, brilliant, brilliant. Yeah. We're the best team. So I thought that was hilarious.
Jenny, she's talked about that a lot because coming from England, when you win the league and you have the most wins, mm-hmm. you are the champion. There's no postseason. There's nothing like that. So she's talked about that. Even last year when they did win the Shield, she was like, we won. I don't know what this postseason is. Who knows?
Beautiful, beautiful stuff there. All right, let's go over to the match that just knock the hats off of a lot of people, because Kansas City against Portland, 9-goal thriller at CPKC Stadium that opened up. Congratulations to Kansas City. I mean, they invested in women's soccer. Like we mentioned, this is the first women's soccer stadium, and it seemed to be such a wonderful opening. I think it was 11,500 people for this match, and the 5-4 match means 9 goals, and as our producer said, all vibes, no defense, a complete sellout in this match for 9 goals, all vibes, no defense. Let's talk through this one because there was so much to talk about. Beautiful game, beautiful game.
It's just the fifth time in NWSL history that a match has had 9 goals in it. And also it's the first time Kansas City has even scored more than 2 against Portland. We got to see really fun football. It was a packed stadium. There was a lot of emotions heading into this game with it being the first NWSL purpose-built stadium. There was a lot of pomp and circumstance around it. Everything was teal. And we got to see a Kansas City side come out attacking, ready to be on that front foot. Under Black Wananowski, I thought it was going to take a little bit of time for this group to come together. Bia Zanarato, the Brazilian international, combining with Dabinha up top, they looked really, really good. And it started with defense. I mean, Kansas City just applied pressure against Portland Thorns, who had trouble building out of the back. And then it was simple when Dabinia just passes it to her teammates. This goal too, like finding the back of the net for Kansas City, they made it look really, really easy. And Dabinia being a huge part of creating the chances for Kansas City in the opening 30 minutes was why Kansas City started so hot. They trailed off toward the end and allowed Portland to get back into this match. But Dabinia, ultimately, she goes off with an injury in the 30th minute. That was Portland's chance to say, okay, let's try to get some more hold of this game. And even when Sophia Smith scored that opening goal to end the first half, she was like not celebrating. She wanted the ball back on the center circle. Let's go get more goals and more opportunities.
I feel like this was the perfect match to open your stadium to, just because it kind of answers a lot of that like pedestrian or new soccer fans that are all like, oh, soccer's such a low scoring game. It's so slow, where they were like, let's go. Just
here's
like set
nine.
Up the fireworks. Yeah.
Yep.
So if anything, I appreciate their inadvertent attempt at proper marketing.
Well, Kansas City ends up getting the win in front of their home fans and it being such a big celebration. You can kind of see that energy from Kansas City. But I do want to talk about a couple players that really made a difference mm-hmm. for Portland. And Sophia Smith being one of those players, obviously scoring two goals. She had been on quite a drought for the U.S. national team. And she talked about that pressure being left off of her after she scored in the W Gold Cup. And then she has this amazing performance for Portland. The shoulder dip here. This is my favorite thing. When she dips her shoulder, it's so confusing as she makes the turn and picks her own shot off. I mean, just incredibly impressive.
Really good for Sophia Smith. That's the only player in the NWSL to have scored in opening games 4 years in a row for Sophia Smith. She looked good. She looked on fire, focused. I think frustration took over from Portland in the opening 30 minutes to go down so many goals. Ultimately, they climbed their way back in. But I want to shout out Alex Pfeiffer for Kansas City, the youngest goal scorer in NWSL history. The children are in this league. The internationals are in this league. And they look really good.
They do.
Look
the really children good. Are scary, I'm going to be honest.
They look really good.
All right, we're going to go to a commercial and have more of the NWSL weekend recap next. But I do want to give a shout out to Janine Becky, who came back from an ACL and scored a brace for Portland Thorns as well. Congratulations to her on the return and a great start.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to Attacking Third, presented by CarMax, the way car buying should be. Well, guys, I said I'll see you guys next time. Next time is now. Let's go ahead and go over this NWSL weekend results. There is so much to talk about. A six-goal game on Saturday between North Carolina Courage and the Houston Dash. Two goals aside for Racing Louisville and Orlando Pride. And Chicago Red Stars get the win over Amy Rodriguez's new squad. And Bay FC get their inaugural win. Let's get right into it. North Carolina Courage against Houston. We're going to start here. Six-goal game, Lisa. Yeah. All six goals scored by North Carolina because the only Houston goal was counted as an own goal.
Yeah, exactly. So North Carolina coming out hot. We got to see a new look with some new acquisitions for Sean Nahas. This midfield for North Carolina. Oh, it's going to be so fun once they get a few more games under their belt. I mean, they already looked really good. Narumi, Ashley Sanchez, Denise O'Sullivan. That's a really creative, crafty group that can get on the ball. They did a great job of finding the space in front of Houston's back line and utilizing every area on the pitch. Every single time North Carolina got the ball, they attacked with numbers. And that's what made them so good against this Houston side. They're only up 1-0 at halftime. Houston very, very much in this game. And North Carolina just said, okay, guess what? We have another gear. We can level up. Watch us go. Watch us cook. Their subs coming in off the bench. Bianca St. George, another free agent acquisition for Sean Nahas. She had a good game with a brace ultimately at the end.
Impact subs. Absolutely impact subs. Menaka coming on and creating a difference too immediately with an assist. Just the movement and everything going on there. We had everything in this game. We even had a little bit of 10-on-10 violence with Denise O'Sullivan and Ordonez with that foul. But it just really, really impressive football. One thing that I actually stood up and was like, yeah, was like Ashley Sanchez literally peeling the ball off of Belle Breedy. and then literally watching her turn and just chase her as she goes. And I was like, I'm faking an injury. Yeah. I'm going down. It's just the absolute confidence that they're playing with already. And I think that going into this, there were at least for me, some questions into, you know, what does this system actually look like? How are they playing? Mm-hmm. How are they playing without Caroline? Who's being entrusted to score the goals? And apparently the answer was everyone.
That's a great point.
Houston failed to the game plan, failed to step up to the game plan. They just gave way too much space to North Carolina, and that's where Houston's going to struggle this year. They have a new coach that came in a little bit later during preseason, but there are moments where Houston could attack with players up top like Maria Sanchez and Diana Ordonez. They have threats. They just weren't on the same page at all during this match, and North Carolina thrived.
Right. Well, after the match, also creating a massive impact all over the field, linking up with Hopkins a bunch of times, just seeing how they were making these runs and kind of creating opportunities. I think there was only one moment in the game where I kind of was like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Where Houston seemed to kind of turn a little bit and catch North Carolina out, where I was like, oh, they're a little bit more flat-footed than they've been the whole match. Granted, it was a little bit late into the second half. They're probably getting a little bit tired, where I thought they created a few opportunities for themselves, and then they ended up just getting turned right back around.
Well, after the match, Fran Alonso, the head coach, spoke about it, and he said that the idea or the game plan was completely wrong. So he was taking some accountability there, that was the wrong way to handle that game. Congratulations to Sean Nahas on such a good performance from North Carolina Courage to open off that season. Let's get into Racing Louisville against Orlando Pride. Bev Yanez, we had her on our show. We all kind of fell in love with the personality that was going to be the head coach of this Racing Louisville side. What did you see from her side that you liked, Lisa?
The players that Bev Yanez has brought in are making an immediate impact, whether it's Alexa Barr up top or Raylan Turner, even in the midfield, Taylor Flint, former Taylor Korniak. They just had pieces of the game for Louisville where they looked really good. The rookie Raylan Turner out of UCLA, drafted by Bev Yanez to fit specifically into her system, was wonderful throughout this game. She didn't get on the score sheet herself, but she was a part of the first two goals that Louisville had, whether it was the initial pass to break lines, the switch of play. She looked confident. She wanted to run at defenders with the ball at her feet. There's a very, very high ceiling for Raylan Turner.
How much do you think it benefited her, Bev, this season to have that kind of free reign to pull those players that she had selected?
So much benefit for her. I mean, Alexa Barr, the Colombian international that came into this group, she played really well in the midfield with Jordan Baggett, offseason acquisition, Taylor Flint, offseason acquisition, Raylan Turner, offseason acquisition. These are players that Bev Yanez, she had a game plan for how she wanted to play. She wanted tactical and technical understanding and awareness from her players. So those are the type of players she went after. Players that already had a really high IQ that could understand and flex between different systems. And now we're getting to see that play out for Racing Louisville. Unfortunately, they let Orlando back into the match and great on Orlando because they end up splitting points at the end of it. They force an own goal and crawl back in. And they looked good by the end of this game.
I thought that one of the things that they really did well was breaking those lines on the transition, right? There was so much space between Orlando's back line in those situations. Their ability to transition defensively wasn't there for Orlando Pride. I think the loss of Hafina probably had a lot to do with that. She is that center defender that's going to lead that Orlando Pride back line. And losing her after she was hurt in the W Gold Cup, I think, is massive.
Yeah, without Hafaeli, it's definitely a big loss. Sams, Emily, formerly Madrill, Sams. We got a lot of new names in the league this year. A lot of changes, trying to stay on top of them.
I need a card that just like arrow, last name, surname. Yeah.
Orlando changed their game plan because they didn't allow Louisville to transition as quickly. That's where the two goals for Racing came from. On transitions, one or two passes to get down the pitch and get in behind. Orlando stopped that transition in the second half, which allowed them to grow into the match.
Well, that adjustment does make a difference, absolutely. But Louisville did take advantage of that. Kanu with her goal. I am a big fan of Kanu, always have been for Louisville. Let's go over to Utah Royals and the Chicago Red Stars. Amy Rodriguez and Lauren Donaldson both taking over for these sides at the beginning of this season. And the biggest thing, happy to see Mal Swanson back for Chicago Red Stars.
She looks so happy to be back, too. I mean, massive impact. Nice to see her playing. And we did talk with Lauren Donaldson ahead of this season, and we talked about, you know, having worked with her prior, like, what's the game plan? How does this move forward? And it seems like he's gotten everybody fairly sorted. They were moving as a cohesive unit. I think for me, Utah looked like a side that hasn't really gelled yet, quite frankly. They kind of lacked a lot of urgency that I expected kind of from the start. And then I expected Chicago to kind of run riot on them. Didn't really happen, but I feel like they looked good.
For Chicago, they sat back in a mid to low block, similar to what we had seen Jamaican women's national team under Lauren Donaldson do. But you have a player like Mallory Swanson who looks, she looks like she hasn't missed a beat. Mm-hmm. It has not been a year since she hit the pitch. She looked so good. And Chicago really sat back. They allowed Utah to play and to build out. I wanted Chicago to press, see if they could win the ball back higher, put Utah under pressure. They were playing without their starting goalkeeper, Carly Nelson, in goal, without Mandy Haught, who was serving her red card suspension.
Oh, my gosh, I forgot about that.
Game. So Mandy Haught not available for this match, Carly Nelson in the back. And they had young, new players in the midfield, two youth internationals in Nyberg and Froder, and then Allie Sentnor, the number one overall draft pick in the front line. She had moments and spells of greatness, but you cannot rely on a rookie to be your only player in the attack. Mm. Utah needed more pizzazz going forward. Ifeoma Anamanu came in late in the game. She provided a spark in the attacking presence for Utah, but that was too late at that point. You're already down 2-0. It's not enough to come back against Chicago.
I will say one comment as a listener came up big a couple of times, almost back to back for the Chicago Red Stars. And it's good to see her continuing her form right after the W Gold Cup. We saw incredible performances from her, kind of solidifying herself as, hey, I'm still here after my 100th cap with the national team and I'm better than ever. She continued that with the Chicago Red Stars. Mm-hmm. Good to see after such a difficult season that they had last year. We go over to Seattle Reign against Washington Spirit. Plenty to talk about in this one, but I do want to say, is it a red card? Was it a red card for Kingsbury?
Yeah, I think it was at the end of the game.
Yes.
I thought it was so close, you know? I thought it was on the line and the on the line didn't count. But you know what? It was a red card. It was a red card. Lisa, tell us about
it. It wasn't as obvious as the Gotham red card in the championship game to the aforementioned Mandy Haught, but this one definitely was a red card. We have to talk about the opening minute of this match because Seattle, they go into the attack, they throw numbers forward, and Jordan Huitema, she gets taken down by Gabrielle Carl in the opening 10 seconds of this game. If that's a game plan, get into your opposition's attacking 18, be in there, whether it's drawing a corner kick, creating shot opportunities, or drawing a penalty, it worked for Laura Harvey's side. This is the penalty as we're seeing. Carl takes down Huitema in the box, and then Bethany Balser steps up to finish it. So by the opening third minute, Washington is now trying to dig themselves out of a hole on the road in front of a really packed Seattle stadium.
For sure. And also Balser with that pen, that just the rolling glacial. I could never.
It was bad.
Yeah. Just.
It was softly hit for Bethany Balser, but Washington or Seattle, they get this goal. Washington gets one back. Casey Krueger does find the back of the net. It goes to VAR. There was a handball leading up to the play. So the goal is called back. But Jiso Young for Seattle. Good. Very good, good on the ball. This is a player that's going to elevate the midfield for under Laura Harvey and the combination play with what she can do. She can pick it up in really tight spaces, spin out of defenders. She actually, it craves that. She wants two or three defenders around
her. It's a great shot,
Lisa. Spin out. Mm-hmm. And then because she draws all those players, it opens up the wingers. Seattle played with a diamond in the midfield and they had Balser and Huitema higher up the field. And with G at the top of that diamond, she works really well with those front players. I'm excited to see that partnership grow throughout the year.
That's such a great shout. I will say this is totally, well, it's related, but it's not. The post game video from Seattle Reign had such high quality, like the close-up of the players. Bethany Balser was the first one and all the players coming up. I was like, this is the kind of video quality I want to see in women's soccer, okay? Just hear me continue to press everybody to please continue to give investment and better video quality in media. We'll go over to California for Angel City against Bay FC. Bay FC going in for their inaugural game. Albertine Montoya, the head coach there. And I want, oh, there you go. You see a picture of her there. The importance of Prue, Bay FC's goalkeeper in this match, Christine.
This match had me sitting upright. One, because I just wanted to see what Bay was actually going to look like when they finally took the field. And they were so aggressive, okay? The press, you could see the triggers. Every single time the ball went anywhere near Sarah Gordon, she had Oshwala on top of her, okay? There was no space, no time. She was pressing so hard, I was waiting for her to ask if she needed starch in her shirt. It was beautiful. Like, I love that style. The thing is, like, her goal, perfect. And you know what? She said it, she meant it. And I said this yesterday, like, she said she was coming in to compete and compete heavily. And of course, first goal for the club is, like, you couldn't write a better story. The problem with that was they were doing everything else right, but there weren't as many chances and there was less creation going forward. Did they dominate the game? Yes. They just didn't seem to do anything with it.
Angel City looked good throughout this match. I was uncertain how they were going to play, especially against a Bay FC side that was very unknown. We got our first glimpse of both expansion sides. Bay, they looked exactly how Albertine Montoya wants them to look. High pressing, winning the ball up really high, trying to just move quickly in transition. They became susceptible in the back with struggling to build out at certain moments with the high press from Angel City, because Angel City did this really creative press where they sat back and then they had trigger moments where it was Alyssa Thompson then running at your defenders and trying to squeeze you into one side, and Bay had trouble building out of that. So that opening goal in the 17th minute from Oshawala really helped keep Angel City at bay, because they were getting opportunities, shots off the crossbar to end this game. Angel City wanted this win more than anything, and Prue in goal for Bay made it possible for Bay to get this win.
Yeah, she definitely deserves a shout out there, but I will say the pressing was very obvious. That's something that Albertino Montoya told us when we interviewed him. He said, I want my team to have the ball, right? So that means pressing quickly and earning the ball back, because I want my team to have the possession of the ball. He told us loud and clear, and then Asisat Oshawala with the good goal. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah, and with Bay, they didn't use their midfield as much with Alex Luera. They really switched the ball around the back instead of going centrally. I want to see them push it higher up the field.
Okay, we're going to have Sandra Herrera joining us next for her power rankings in NWSL, so stick with us.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Welcome back to Attacking Third, presented by CarMax, the way car buying should be. Now, this is Sandra Herrera, NWSL Power Rankings. After the first weekend of play, we have San Diego as number one, North Carolina Courage right below them, Gotham FC as number three, Seattle Reign, and Orlando Pride. These are her top five power rankings after this first weekend. And Sandra Herrera joins us now to talk through and discuss what this means. I got to know, what impressed you the most about San Diego this weekend, Sandra? You put them as your number one.
Listen, that Challenge Cup game had some stretches there where kind of felt a little preseason-y. It was kind of cagey at times, but I think we got a look at arguably what are going to be the two best teams in the league, and it kind of felt that way for a reason. I don't know if you take a look at San Diego and take a look at all of their off-season moves, how they have much of their Shield winning roster back in place, and the addition of Savannah McCaskill, a rising elevated form in Alex Morgan. You have Naomi Girma on the back line. You have Kaylin Sheridan holding things down in net, and not look at this team and say they're going to go some places in the league this year.
All right, Sandra, you mentioned Gotham San Diego was probably our look at the top best teams, but North Carolina is now on your list at this point, number two. They beat Houston-5-1. But, I mean, North Carolina was going up against a pretty depleted Houston-side. Why is North Carolina so high?
Because that's what I want to see. Look, it's not unfair to talk about sport, to take a look at a team and say, this team should beat that team. And North Carolina Courage absolutely did that in their opening week. But I think there was also some curiosity around if this team would continue to build off of what they did in the previous season. They lost Caroline to that ACL injury. They went out and perhaps found an answer in Ashley Sanchez as an attacking player who can constantly find herself on the ball and make things happen. And I think they went out and they picked up what are going to be kind of one of the two more underrated free agent signings of this offseason, and Danny Weatherholt and Bianca St. George. We saw her come off of the bench and score not one, but two goals for this team. I'm very impressed by North Carolina Courage and how they kind of have shown that they're not going to miss a little step in terms of what they started to build last year and are going to continue to build on this year.
Okay, Sandra, fine. Why aren't the Courage first then? No, I'm kidding. I want to talk to you a little bit about the recent sales. What do you think this says about the broader landscape for soccer investment domestically and for the women's game?
I think it's massive. You know, I don't know if any of us truly would have said that in a couple of years, you know, post 2020 first ever Challenge Cup, that in a few seasons this league was going to find itself with multi-million dollar deals for different waves of investment, whether it has been the sale of current existing long-standing clubs, really. I think that's what's also most impressive, but also clubs who are newer to the league. Recent reporting around San Diego and Angel City valuations as well. I think it's huge. I think it's a real turning point for the league. I think, and that's what's most important. I think for a lot of times when we talk about the growth of something, whether it's individual clubs or the league as a whole, there's oftentimes where you want to point to something and say, this is how and this is why. And these massive valuations, these literal cash out kind of sales along the way, are those very big sort of tangible things that we can point at and look at and say, growth, here it is. This is part of what it looks like.
Sandra, I want to jump back into your power rankings because Kansas City Current is not in your top five, and they put away five over Portland Thorns. What do the Current need to do to climb in your power rankings?
I think they just need to continue to build off of what they've been doing. And look, in fairness to me, Lisa, I need you to go out there and make sure that you're reading the power rankings on CBSSports.com because we keep these going throughout the year. We had ones that we put out for the preseason. We had ones that we put out leading into opening week. And now we have one coming out of opening weekend. And Kansas City Current, with their performance, actually got bumped up in my power rankings, even though they're not currently in the top five. But I think for starters, they know that they have to absolutely lock it up defensively. It's exciting, I think, for neutrals to go ahead and get treated to a 9-goal game in opening weekend. But I think if you're on the winning side of that, you're not very happy having conceded 4 goals at home. So they don't need me to tell them. Lolo Bonta and the crew were already speaking about that exiting the match, how it was a massive, wildly exciting game, but they're not happy about conceding 4 goals. So I would expect them to kind of lock things up moving forward. And if they continue to get more wins, climb up the power rankings.
All right, beautiful, Sandra. We love your power rankings, and we will go to CBSSports.com to read those as well. Make sure everybody goes and does that as well. Thank you, Sandra, as always. We're going to talk about the WSL weekend when we return. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back. It is time for our Barclays Women's Super League weekend results recap. Chelsea beating Arsenal 3-1. We talked about that one earlier in the show. Liverpool also getting a 3-1 scoreline against West Ham United. Tottenham beating Leicester City. And Manchester City beating Brighton 4-1. Let's get started with that match there, Christine. Bunny Shaw. We love talking about Bunny Shaw and all the goals she scored, and she did get on the score sheet for this one.
She did. This was her 17th goal for the season. That was the third goal scored this match. It was off a header from across from Hasegawa, which was just beautiful. But City all in just had a really good match. They had a characteristic match for them. They're sitting in second right now, only on goal differential, trying to reach for the stars there for the league. But I think what we saw was them pressing a ton, as they're apt to do. They managed to absolutely negate Elizabeth Turland, who's third in the league with 11 goals, and just cut off all service to her. So it was one of those matches where the offense is the best defense. They just strangled them in the midfield. There was nothing for Brighton to really do.
Well, Brighton's goalkeeper did look to make a mistake there, because that was a first post shot for Lauren Hemp, and she somehow got through there. I feel like that should have been saved, Lisa.
Yeah, it was a tough one. I mean, Lauren Hemp's really talented, even that one between the legs on the final goal there for City. There were moments and spells where Brighton just looked completely deflated. And how can you not, when you're going up against such a potent attack that is Manchester City? Lauren Hemp, Mary Fowler, Bunny Shaw, Laura Coombs, all getting goals. And there was a consolation goal in the final waning minutes of this match for Brighton that gave them a boost. Imagine if that came in the 40th minute, right? Even if they could have just held off on City's attack, slowed them down a little bit, retained possession, really try to keep it compact in front of the box, make it more difficult for Manchester City. But Brighton didn't. They fell apart in those moments, and City makes it look really easy.
Yeah, Lee, that stoppage time goal, not her first stoppage time goal. The last time that they actually played, she beat City with a stoppage time goal. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, you know, nice to have history repeating itself, just different outcome.
I will say that although it is very clear that Manchester City is such a good team, I do think that it was kind of a mismatch, right? Like when we talk about how good of a team Brighton is in comparison to these players that we're talking about in Manchester City, it is like an expected to win Manchester City. And you kind of see that in the way that they're playing.
Completely. And post-game, City manager Gareth Taylor talked about how they had a game plan and it was clinical, and there are moments where they did finish. But the fact that they conceded a goal at the end was very, very frustrating. Lauren Hemp even saying it was disappointing to concede this goal. That is not how we want to play. So I think that goes into what you're saying, Jenny, right? Depending on the competition you're going up against, sometimes you're okay to concede one because you still got the win. Right. That was not the case for City in this match.
Right. City for this, actually what I'll say is both sides of this match really, really mattered. Brighton right now are sitting 8 points off, just being nestled in the relegation zone. City, two more goals, they would literally be in first. So they're kind of fighting for that goal differential every single match they play at this point, just chasing Chelsea.
Yeah, what you're alluding to there is the title race right now in the WSL. Chelsea and Manchester City are currently tied on points with 40 points each, but Chelsea ahead with two goal differential points there. So every goal counts. We talk about Chelsea in their match, how much their goals mattered, even though they were somewhere a little bit lucky. Some may have been goalkeeper mistakes. And then also Manchester City giving away one at the end. That's something that's going to bite them, because they need all the goals they can get, and not giving away goals is so important, Lisa.
And there's only so many match days left. Mm-hmm. Every single one, like these teams are looking at the match that's directly in front of them. Match day 16, now we're on to match day 17. So they turn the page and they focus specifically on this. But you have to have your greater vision, knowing that there's only so many games left.
Right.
And for either of these sides, for Chelsea, they have to continue to score a lot of goals. They also conceded this weekend against Arsenal. It doesn't help them in the goal differential race. It's such small margins at this point in the season. I love it. Absolutely love
City. Also now have the singular focus, having been eliminated from the FA Cup and the League's Cup, coincidentally the latter by Chelsea, that this is now it for them.
Well, I just tried to write up the schedule here, because there are six games left, and City and Chelsea both face the same teams with one difference. Chelsea just played against Arsenal. Yeah. City is playing against Arsenal, and then Chelsea is playing against Tottenham in that place instead of City playing against Tottenham. So that's the one difference, right? So Chelsea in third place, Tottenham in sixth place. I don't know if this makes sense if we're all listening on podcast ends. That gives Chelsea a higher chance, if we're talking stats and numbers here, right? An easier run to getting more points than City here. But obviously, everything is very, very close.
It's very close. And of course, we're talking about the title race, but we just have to give a little bit of love at the bottom of the table to relegation, because Bristol City has fallen behind. They end up falling 2-0 to Manchester United after this weekend. And for Bristol, first season being back in the Super League, they have an uphill battle at the end of this season. They've won just one match this year. They still have to take on Chelsea, Manchester City, and Arsenal in their final six.
That is
absolutely brutal.
That is a tough one. Okay, we're going to be talking Women's Champions League when we come back, so stay with us here on Attacking Third.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
The bracket is set. The women's quarterfinals has been picked out. And these are the first leg fixtures. Ajax against Chelsea. That's on Tuesday. Haken against PSG on Wednesday. And then Benfica against Lyon. Brann against Barcelona. Let's go through and preview these as quickly as possible, ladies. Let's get started with Ajax against Chelsea, Lisa.
Yeah, Ajax is a side that made it out of the group stage surprising a lot of people, whether it was the opposition that they played up against or, they went undefeated against Bayern. They topped Roma. They topped PSG throughout their group stage play. And right now, Ajax is on an 8-match winning streak, and they've scored at least 2 goals in all of those. Now, they're going up against a Chelsea side that is coming off a win in Super League play that rested a number of different players. Will they be back for Emma Hayes' side against Ajax? I think they might be getting back into this. They go on the road, so Ajax is hosting this first leg, and Chelsea can compete on the road, right? Sometimes when you get into these Champions League matches, depending if your first leg's home or away, it's a big advantage or disadvantage. I expect Chelsea to come out on the front foot against Ajax and kind of put them into their place, especially in this first leg.
Remember how important this is, because Emma Hayes' last season with Chelsea, she wants this Champions League. They are up against Ajax. Let's move on to Benfica against Lyon. That's happening on Tuesday, March 19th.
Benfica and Lyon both in similar form. Benfica currently on a lossless streak, whereas Lyon have taken but 1 in the last 6 matches. Benfica, obviously all eyes on Alidou. She's their primary goal-scoring threat. With Lyon, they do have a bit of a weak inside. They have Wendy Renard out injured, as well as Amandine Henry. We have a question mark beside Ada Hegerberg, which obviously that's a significant amount of muscle for that Lyon side. But I think that right now my prediction is I think Benfica might pull this off.
Wow.
Ooh. Yeah, it might be a little bit of an upset.
There you go, Christine.
Lyon's hot right now in league play.
I know.
They're really good.
Well, that's
so
what happens.
Benfica.
That's true.
Well, Benfica, this is their first ever quarterfinal appearance, and obviously Lyon having so much success within the Women's Champions League. That is an interesting take. You know we're going to come back to you.
Oh, yeah,
depending on what happens.
Listen, you have to have at least one dark horse team.
You have
and
to.
I feel like the Portuguese sides get ruled out more often than not, and I think that they could have something going here.
Speaking of dark horses, we had Haken as a dark horse, and we have really liked their play up until this point. They are up against PSG.
Yes,
Christine.
They have had quite the insurmountable task in this group of death, but they have managed to prove that they are quite worthy of being here. I think Rosa Kafaji is one of their star players. They're also coming off hot from the weekend from winning the Svenska Cupen. I think that all spirits are high. Recent interviews have indicated that they're well aware that they're going to be trying to slay yet another giant. And I think they're up to task. I don't know. PSG obviously are a very scary side.
I think Haken has a good chance in this match, frankly. They're feisty. They're really competitive. They get into good pockets. And PSG has been susceptible to leaking goals this year.
They really have. And I just think that they've been so consistent, Haken. I know that both you and Sandra, I think Jenny as well, were very, very high on Häkkinen when we were trying to make predictions for what we were coming into here. And I think that Sandra even guessed that they would be matched up against this PSG side. So this will be my match to watch. I will be fully upright popcorn.
We love rooting for the underdog, and you know what? I want Häkkinen to win this one as well. Nothing against PSG, but just the fact that their story has gone so well and they've been slaying those big teams. Let's move on to Braun versus Barcelona. That is the last matchup here. Obviously, we know Barcelona, the reigning champs here.
For sure. I'd like to root for an underdog, but you just can't bet against Barcelona in this match. For Braun, they finished second in their group. They lost to Lyon, but then they drew to Lyon in that second meeting, 2-2. But in the group stages for Braun, they struggled with their clearances. They offered opposition second chances, and Barcelona is going to pounce all over that. Barca's just so good right now, guys. They are on fire. They're connecting really well. And they want this. They want this. They've been here before. They can handle the pressure. So I give Barcelona the edge.
I love it. I don't blame you there. Obviously, Barcelona, they're that team. They are that team that you just, they won't go away. They won't go away.
And the way the bracket works in Champions League, if Barcelona win and Chelsea win, that's going to be our semifinal match.
We love that.
Are you kidding?
We love that. Okay, we're going to be back on Thursday on YouTube. So make sure that you join us for the recaps and the upcoming weekend previews that we have. I really enjoyed being here in studio with you guys. I mean, our bright colors, we were on point. The energy of just getting to be in the same room with you guys is totally different than being on StreamYard as well. But thank you guys so much for joining us on Attacking Third, presented by CarMax, the way car buying should be.
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the Chi?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down! Walk right up to
the sun. A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes now streaming. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with the Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. The subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.